It scared the crap out of me. I did not feel comfortable in the street with no helmet on and on a scooter. It was actually really stupid, and I stopped after like a block.
I had the same experience.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the GeekWire podcast. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
And I'm GeekWire civic editor Monica Nicholsberg.
We're going to be talking about scooters and Spokane today. What could be better, Monica?
It's all on my beat. I love it.
That's great. So, but first, I wanted to jump into what has really been the hot topic of the tech industry in this spring season of developer conferences. I don't know if you've ever noticed, but all of the major tech companies, most of them have their big developer conferences, like in this time frame.
Yeah, it's like how they all report earnings at the same time, too. I think it's just a mess with tech reporters.
Exactly. So over the past few weeks, both Facebook, Google, Microsoft, they've all had their developer conferences. And there has been a common theme in these conferences, and it's not, you know, the cloud, it's not the next big devices.
Is it blockchain?
It's not blockchain. It's not AI, although those are common themes. But the one I wanted to point out was this one. Let's listen to first Satya Nadella, then Sundar Pichai of Google. So let's listen to this montage.
But we also share a deep responsibility together. It starts with us as platform providers, but we have a collective responsibility. A few years ago when we started talking about it, it felt a bit prosaic to talk about responsibility in tech conferences where it's all about the glitz of technology. But it's no longer the case. To us, really thinking about the trust in everything that we build, in the technology we build, is so core.
In addition to finding easy access to your privacy controls, you'll find a new feature, incognito mode. Incognito mode has been a popular feature in Chrome since it launched, and we are bringing this to Maps. While in incognito in Maps, your activity, like the places you search and navigate to, won't be linked to your account. We want to make it easy to enter in and out of incognito, and Maps will soon join Chrome and YouTube with support for incognito, and we'll be bringing it to search as well this year.
And we felt we could make a difference in the way that news is experienced and understood. A place where the news would come from trusted sources and be curated by experts.
That's Tim Cook at Apple's recent product launch event. But then this is the granddaddy of them all. Are you ready for this one?
I'm ready.
All right.
Privacy gives us the freedom to be ourselves. It's easier to feel like you belong when you're part of smaller communities and amongst your closest friends. So it's no surprise that the fastest ways that we're all communicating online are private messaging, in small groups, and in stories. As the world gets bigger and more connected, we need that sense of intimacy more than ever. So that's why I believe that the future is private.
All right, so that was obviously Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook CEO, speaking at the recent F8 conference. So you can see the common thread through all of these. Privacy is basically the new hotness in technology. So, Monica, for me, as I was listening to all of those, Satya Nadella's pitch seemed the most natural. Microsoft has been fighting these battles literally for decades. Security, trustworthy computing, they had their own regulatory struggles with the FTC back in the day. And it seemed like just sort of a natural extension of their conversation. It was interesting that both Tim Cook and Sundar Pichai focused on products, like here's exactly how it's going to happen. And then Mark Zuckerberg, to me, sounded like he was somebody who was saying exactly what he thought everybody wanted him to say and that he didn't really believe it. That was my gut reaction as just a human being watching that speech. What were your takeaways on all of these things, and what are your thoughts on where this puts the tech industry overall as you look at what these companies are doing now?
Well, big picture, tech companies pitching privacy is kind of like the organization that drained the well, now trying to sell you bottled water. You know, it's a little bit of a hard pill to swallow. It's certainly easier in the case of Apple and Microsoft because their businesses don't rely on the ability to collect huge amounts of data and monetize it. Facebook and Google, it's a little bit more difficult to believe them. And I think one of the reasons Google is focusing on a product narrowly is as sort of a distraction from the bigger picture premise of their business, which is to know a lot about you. And Facebook is a little bit different because they are, at least they say they are, trying to really fundamentally change their business and pivot to private ephemeral messaging. And I guess we'll see, but I agree that Mark Zuckerberg is he's kind of painted into a corner, and this is the only thing that he can say at this point.
And the difficult thing in listening to him is when you listen to a CEO of a big company, you want to hear conviction, you want to hear a vision, and something that isn't affected by the way the winds are blowing that year or that day or that month. And for me, listening to Mark Zuckerberg, it was very obvious that he was, it felt like a fad. It felt like somebody who was giving a talk about some kind of trendy product versus somebody who had deep convictions and principles about the subject that he was talking about. Now, I recognize Facebook is changing some things, and you reported on these in your story on F8. But at the same time, there were so many caveats in what he had to say. It, for me, as a listener, it was hard to take him seriously.
Right. And in some ways, I think this pivot to privacy, as he once put it, he actually later changed that blog post, so you can't find that online anymore.
Oh, really?
But originally, it said they were pivoting to privacy. It's kind of a return to the very, very early days of Facebook, which I read an article that said that this is not really a new idea, but more an admission of failure on Zuckerberg's part, because Facebook got cool because it was exclusive. You had to have a college email address to join it. And because there was this level of exclusivity and it felt like a community of people you know, you could be more authentic, so the story goes, because it was more private. And then Facebook opened up and made a ton of money by doing that. And it really changed the product that people had come to love. And over time, it eroded that feeling that you can be authentic on the platform. And so now, by going back to that original idea of Facebook, it shows that maybe under his leadership, it got out of control. And now he's trying to put the genie back in the bottle.
It'll be interesting to see whether he long term is the person who gets it back under control. Because, again, I don't mean to harp on this, but listening to this, I had a hard time believing that that was him saying that. It felt like it was him saying what had been scripted for him by somebody else. And granted, he may have written it himself, but ultimately the inspiration came from society, regulators, and then probably their policy people inside Facebook saying, hey, this, you must do this at the F8 developer conference. So at any rate, has it changed? Has any of this changed how you use products personally?
Well, I definitely do not use Facebook as much as I did when I was in college or high school. And part of that is just because I don't enjoy the experience as much. But I use Instagram all the time, and that's a Facebook product. So they haven't lost me as a user. And I think it's going to be really interesting if they continue to move in this direction of consolidating their brands, WhatsApp, Instagram, and Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg has said that he wants to bring everything together. And I think that's a huge risk because there are people who are very devoted users of WhatsApp and Instagram who don't like Facebook.
It seems like that's been one of their hidden strengths. Facebook as a big company is that they have these multiple brands that different people can find an affinity with. And even if they don't like the mothership, as it were, they can stick with this little, you know, sort of skiff over here on the right in terms of Instagram.
Yeah. Has this changed your behavior at all?
You know, it's changed my awareness. It has not yet changed my behavior. You know, there were a bunch of stories recently pointing out again how much Google Maps tracks your activity and basically knows where you're going. And so that announcement by Sundar Pichai was something that resonated with me. And I think that the incognito mode in Maps on your phone would be something that I might use, although not for any specific purpose, not to hide anything, but just because it gets a little creepy. Who could eventually get that? What could they do with it? I think all these are important questions for us to think about and at least be aware of. So I think it's a good thing that these companies are talking about privacy. I will tell you, I walked away from the Microsoft Build keynote where one of the central themes was privacy, thinking, okay, so like, what's the great new technology, folks? You know, like, there is a risk, especially in Microsoft's case, that they might err too far on the side of being that kind of staid, respectable company and not generate enough excitement because, well, they are trading places with Apple, and Amazon is the most valuable company in the world. So who am I to judge?
Yeah, and they're probably going to escape regulatory oversight that some of these other companies might be subject to.
Exactly. Although you never know.
True.
LinkedIn, you know, I could see some things happening where it might impact them. But and they do get into Bing advertising. So there are some elements, but certainly it's not core to their business. And they've been able to pivot away from traditional software licenses, but not to advertising overall. They're still selling software as a service, cloud services, and they're still getting basically pay per use, pay for use through a variety of their products rather than essentially subsidizing the use through advertising. So they are in a much stronger position. All right. Well, we have full coverage of the Microsoft Build conference on GeekWire, and we will link to all of these various announcements from the show notes on this podcast. We will be right back on the GeekWire podcast talking scooters.
I wanted a career in IT, but I didn't know where to start. WGU makes it simple. Their accredited online degree programs cover all kinds of IT specialties, and they have valuable industry certifications built in at no extra cost. The payoff? Having those certs back up my degree makes me look even better to future employers. A nonprofit university that includes top industry certs in their programs? I choose WGU. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back. It's Todd Bishop with Monica Nicholsberg. Monica, there was a story that you broke this week, and I showed it to my 8-year-old daughter, and her reaction was, yay.
Has that ever happened with one of my stories and your daughter?
No, it has not.
Well, new milestone.
So tell us, in short, what happened with the scooter sharing programs in Seattle this past week.
Seattle's mayor, Jenny Durkin, came out and said that she is planning and wants a scooter pilot and a long-term scooter share program. There are some caveats. She wants the scooter share companies to meet some safety benchmarks and to stop their practice of trying to prevent themselves from being liable in the case of an accident, because she said then the liability falls to cities and that's not fair. But it very much seems like we're going full steam ahead with scooter share. And it's an interesting story because Seattle was the first city in the nation to adopt free-floating bike share. But it's been one of the slowest to get on board with scooters. And now we're finally kind of coming up to speed and learning why the city's been slower to adopt.
Yeah, why have they been slower to adopt? Because this is something that has been confusing. We got the Lime bikes, we got the OFOs, they're gone. I can't even remember half of the names of the bikes that we had on the streets. But other cities have gotten scooters way before Seattle has.
There are a couple of things going on. The city is really concerned about safety. And with the bike share, we were one of the first, but we did it in a pretty measured process. The pilot was more than a year long, and the city had all kinds of requirements about the data that these companies had to share with them. They took their time studying it and writing a long-term permit that they felt like worked for them. And they want to do the same thing with scooters. So they've been slow for that reason, but also because they are a little bit concerned that scooters might overtake bikes. So that's another thing that we've been seeing happen across the country. These companies tend to prioritize scooters over bikes, and when scooters come into a market, they tend to get used more often.
Oh, really?
Really. And that's a concern. And then the last concern is that there have been some issues raised by the by advocates for people with disabilities who say that these bikes can be a hindrance by being in the way of, say, wheelchair paths. They can be in the way for people who are visually impaired. And the city wants to find ways to enforce regulations that prevent those issues from happening.
So that's on the bikes.
On the bikes.
And so in the scooters, essentially, will that follow the same pattern where they have these similar restrictions that are meant to keep the scooters from disrupting everything else that's going on in the city?
They really want to. Yeah. The city is building thousands of bike parking areas where they want the bikes to be parked. But, you know, the way that these services work is you can pick up a bike anywhere and leave it anywhere. So they're trying to figure out the sort of secret sauce to enforce parking. And I think they just feel like it's going to be an even more complicated challenge when scooters enter.
Interesting. Yeah. I got to tell you, I spent quite a bit of time last year in Washington, D.C., where they had the Bird scooters and a couple others. And I found them to be way more dangerous, like generally, than the bikes, because you're out there, generally, you're just sort of sitting on this little platform that's whizzing through the street. I think in D.C., you were not technically allowed to ride them on the sidewalks, and you needed to have a helmet on under the regulations, but they didn't enforce it. And I remember at one point I wanted to try it because I'd never tried them actually in action other than just sort of like a demo here in Seattle. And it scared the crap out of me. I mean, I did not feel comfortable in the street with no helmet on, and on a scooter. It was actually really stupid, and I stopped after like a block.
I had the same experience. I was in DC to cover Amazon's HQ2 announcement, and I thought, here's a great opportunity to, you know, see what scooter mania is all about. And I rented one. I got on it. I realized it was more than I bargained for, so I turned into a parking lot and rode around for about 30 seconds, and I was like, I can't learn this right now. This is too scary and dangerous, and I didn't take them the rest of my trip.
So what are the next steps in Seattle? Are we going to see these this summer, or is it going to be further off? And I'm asking for my daughter.
Well, please tell your daughter that it probably won't be this summer. So what the next steps are is, one, crafting a pilot, and two, modifying the long-term bike share permit so that it can allow scooters. And the mayor's office said that those two things are going to go before the city council in the fall. If all goes according to plan, we need council approval. So I would say probably fall or winter is more likely.
Okay, just in time for the rain and the
40-degree
temperatures. Awesome. Excellent. So we're basically talking summer 2020.
Potentially, but you know, these services have stayed afloat through winters so far.
Yeah. Well, we talked to Ben Gilbert recently about this, the co-founder at Pioneer Square Labs, who is sort of very early in his adoption of Uber and doesn't have a car. And his contention is that scooters essentially replace walking. Whereas bikes might replace a car, scooters are a way to get someplace that's 5, 6, 7 blocks away where you would have walked normally, which...
I don't know that that's necessarily a distinction I'd draw between the scooters and the bikes. And I think that the bikes are safer because everybody knows how to ride a bike, but there's a learning curve with these scooters. Most people haven't ridden them before.
Yeah. I do have to say one thing. Stop, to the people out there, stop riding your bikes without helmets on Shilshole Avenue in Seattle, past Salmon Bay Sand and Gravel. Somebody's going to get hurt. Could I say anything more dad than that?
Shaking your fist. Well, injuries from these services are up. I mean, they're brand new. A year and a half ago, none of this existed, which is pretty wild to think about. But the CDC and other researchers are starting to take a look at this, and they're seeing more traumatic brain injuries. So it's a concern.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So that is the scooter story. Let's go to the Spokane story, the other side of the state. So many people are familiar with the effect of Silicon Valley on Seattle, where people essentially migrate, companies migrate. And you reported this last week on an interesting phenomenon, something very similar that's starting to happen between Seattle and Spokane.
That's right. Spokane is a mid-sized city in eastern Washington, traditionally kind of an agricultural, rural part of the state. And it's starting to see the same phenomenon play out that we've seen with Seattle and San Francisco, where there's a big tech hub, which is bringing in a lot. That's Seattle in this case, or San Francisco, which is bringing in a lot of newcomers, a lot of money. It's putting a squeeze on the housing market, the office space market, and it's making it more competitive for tech talent. And to escape some of those challenges, we see companies and individuals moving into these more modest tech industries, tech hubs, just seeking a better quality of life and lower costs. And we've been tracking that for years between San Francisco and Seattle. On GeekWire, we have a resource that shows there's more than 100 engineering centers of San Francisco tech companies that have opened outposts here. But now there's kind of a secondary effect where people who feel like the same thing is happening in Seattle are moving to Spokane, and the Spokane tech industry is seeing a little bit of a boom as a result of the overflow in Seattle.
And there's some companies that are specifically using this in their recruiting messages.
That's right. This story has evolved over time. This is a little bit of a reporter's notebook moment, but it started because a CEO at a tech company in Spokane contacted us and brought up the very controversial Como piece called Seattle is Dying about homelessness in Seattle, and said, this is coming up a lot in my recruiting talks with folks from Seattle who I'm trying to get to move out to Spokane. So we started there. And what we learned is that it's not just about homelessness, but this is a trend that we're seeing where there are people who are, for whatever reason, dissatisfied with Seattle, or companies that are dissatisfied with Seattle. And Spokane is benefiting.
And the common thread through it is economics, where the lack of affordability for housing, for just general living here in Seattle, makes other markets look more appealing. It is interesting that it's Spokane, because, you know, Vancouver, BC, although they've got their own issues in terms
of
currency.
More expensive.
Yes, exactly. Well, and you've got to take into account citizenship too. So Canada might be a bit more of a challenge, but it is interesting that it's Spokane.
And not like Bellingham or another town west of the Cascades. One factor is that there are a lot of people from Eastern Washington who came out to Western Washington to go to school or to find a job who are more inclined to move back, but just didn't really have the ecosystem or the jobs there to do it. And now that this tech scene is growing, there are more opportunities for them to move back.
Yeah. We had a fun moment at the GeekWire Awards. The company Stay Alfred was one of the nominees for one of the GeekWire Awards, and they were out in force, and they brought a whole party bus out here. In fact, on last week's podcast, we had some audio of the comedian at the show basically roasting the Spokane. So and they took it in stride. So, you know, you gotta love sort of the Spokane toughness, you know.
Just yeah, absolutely. And Stay Alfred was our first company from Spokane, I think, ever nominated for a GeekWire Award, which shows that the industry there is growing. What's kind of funny about this story is that they lost to Rover, a Seattle tech company that it's kind of an on-demand pet sitting app. And Rover is one of the companies in Seattle that's opened an outpost in Spokane.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's right. Yes.
Which I don't know what that means. Maybe the GeekWire Awards just have our finger on the pulse. I don't know, but stuff's happening in Spokane.
All right. Well, I will link to that from the show notes as well. Coming up, it is the Random Channel. And of course, we have to talk about Game of Thrones. It's coming up next. You're listening to GeekWire. All right, welcome back. It is time for the Random Channel, that moment of the week when we talk about the random items we were buzzing about behind the scenes at GeekWire. What was with the Starbucks cup?
It's a metaphor.
What? I didn't expect you to say that. Explain what we're talking about.
Okay, well, spoilers ahead. If you have not caught up on the current season of Game of Thrones, please stop listening. Or if you don't care anymore because it's not what it once was, I understand. So in the most recent episode, as of this recording of Game of Thrones, there was a surprise guest during a scene in the Winterfell Great Hall after this big battle. The Queen Khaleesi Daenerys is sitting there looking moody, and there's a Starbucks coffee cup, which is a little, you know, little out of place sitting there. It's actually since been digitally removed by HBO.
Like on the streaming?
On the streaming site, yeah. But you can find plenty of evidence of it online.
What did you say it is?
It's a metaphor.
In what way?
Because this season is so sloppy.
Oh.
And it's symbolic of what's happening with Game of Thrones, where it's just rushed, it's all over the place, the writing is not as good as it once was. And even the tweet that Game of Thrones put out to try to kind of like make fun of themselves, like, yes, indeed, it was a coffee cup that was out of place. She actually ordered herbal tea, was so not funny and poorly written that it was like, this is just where we're at.
Okay. Well, all right. So I am caught up. My wife and I, we sat down, we caught up, and, you know, it is a little campy. It's a little bit a caricature of itself in some ways, I would say, but it's enjoyable.
It's still entertaining, but it's not nearly as complex or interesting as it was in the early seasons. And I don't know if that's because there's not source material anymore because the show's gone so much farther past the books, or if it's because they're just kind of running out of budget and rushing to resolve storylines. But there are some things that are just feel pretty deeply flawed to me. I think a lot of the female characters who were once very complex and interesting have been reduced to some kind of boring stereotypes.
From one of your favorite topics, Monica, I want to move to another for my random channel item, and that is the Seattle Mariners.
Oh, yes. I love the Seattle Mariners.
I know you do. I know you do, even in their lesser state.
Yes. Well, I love them in I don't really understand anything about baseball, but make up for it in enthusiasm kind of way.
Nice.
So anything you tell me, I believe.
Okay. So I am the opposite of you. So when I go to a game, like my dream would be really to go on my own and to listen to the game broadcast, like the old days. I would not go so far as to sit there with a scorecard. But for me, one of the problems about going to a live baseball game is you look around and suddenly you realize you missed something really important. But if you're listening to the broadcast, and you know, people used to do this with radios, which I'm realizing is now going to probably be the answer to the challenge that I'm about to bring up. But I went recently and I thought, oh my God, I've got my AirPods. You know, this is incredible. Like I can just sit here. Frankly, nobody around me will really even notice that I'm listening to the game through the app. There was so much of a delay in the stream from the app that I was listening to. And so I did want to ask other listeners out there, does anybody else do this? And have you found the right app? I was using the app for a local radio station. I have not yet tried the MLB At Bat app or any of like the ballpark app for their streams. But I have a hunch if the radio station's stream was delayed enough, and it was like, it felt like up to a minute, 30 seconds to a minute that it was delayed. But it's such a good use case. And now you've got the AirPods. And so you're not having to walk around with some giant thing on your head, you know, or look like the dork with the radio. You can look like the dork with the AirPods. Anyway, that whole experience of combining the live action with personal narration, basically somebody narrating the action, I love that whole concept. And it's so traditional at the ballpark, and yet I couldn't do it. So I'm going to try it again and then maybe write about it if it doesn't work.
It's interesting because I think a lot of stadiums are trying to do this where they combine virtual information with what's happening in front of you. But I'm kind of skeptical that there is going to be a big use case for it. I could see my fiance, who is a diehard Mariners fan, totally using it. I'm not sure he loves me sitting there next to him saying, "What's that? What's happening? What's that? What does that mean?" the whole time. But I think most people go to the ballpark because they want to talk and drink beer and be social, you know?
No, you're doing a sample size of one. You're saying, I like doing these things, so therefore I am representative of most people.
Most people I know who go to baseball games do it for the novelty of it. They don't go because they're super focused on the game.
I think you're right. And it's an experience.
Right.
And for me, that's the problem. It happens.
That it's an experience?
Yeah. It happens at basketball games, too. Like, there were a few times I was at Staples Center for a couple games this past season in L.A., and there were a few moments where, like, I don't know if it was a mistake or what, but there wasn't any music or sound effects playing during the game, and you could just, like, you could hear it. You could hear the game. Mm. It was magical. It made you realize there's actually a game. And frankly, the squeaking of the sneakers and, you know, you could hear all sorts of things, them yelling at each other. That, to me, made it a much better experience rather than this artificial live experience that's almost trying to replicate what you would get at home. I don't know. I would much prefer something authentic, augmented by helpful information rather than all the damn music. I am really sounding old. And don't ride your scooters on Shilshol without a helmet.
And everybody at the game has to sit quietly.
No. See, that's the problem. This is where I get in trouble. This is like every time this happens, I'll come up with some new thing that I would prefer, and everybody interprets it as a rule. And it's not a rule. Do whatever the hell you want at the game. All right. We got to go.
We have a game coming up as a group.
We do. Okay. And I will not bring my AirPods to that.
Excellent.
But I can try it out. I do want to try it out at that game to see if I can get any kind of stream that syncs up with the game.
Okay. I'm going to take pictures of you being dorky.
So, Monica, we can say to people, we have to go because you and I have an important appointment this afternoon. We are interviewing Melinda Gates about her book, The Moment of Lift.
We are. I'm really excited.
I am too. It's going to be a good interview. And here's the bonus. It's going to be on the podcast next week. So tune in to the GeekWire podcast next week to hear what we hope will be a great interview. All right. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
We'll talk to you next time on GeekWire.